I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Done. Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
So to start off with, as I said, we've got a bunch of questions to go through. The first one comes from Ryan Bennick, and he says, after a customer has started a trial, it's our job to help them become successful with our product. This effort will lead to long-term customer with big lifetime value. What suggestions do you have for engaging and nurturing the onboarding process, given that we know what milestones the customer will need to reach in order to become successful?
It depends heavily on who your customer is, what kind of company you run, what kind of culture you have, what you're good or bad at. But in very generic terms, if you're early in the process, I would do anything and everything possible. And I wouldn't worry if it's profitable or scalable. So you might want to drive to their office, you know, and spend an afternoon with them, get to know them, set them up. If you can't do that, you want to definitely call them, you know, talk to them, figure out why did they sign up? How did they find out about you? What are their needs? What are other things they've looked into? Build a relationship and help them succeed with whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you can just go up the different steps of things that scale more, but are less personal, so they lack some context and they will lack some crucial insights. Because the crucial thing here is, whatever it is that you think you know that your new trial users need to do to be successful, you're probably wrong about a bunch of stuff. And the only way to get real insights into what they truly need to be successful, you want to spend as much time as possible trying to get to these insights. And spending time with them in person, on the phone, is going to be a lot more insightful than just sending them a survey or just automating drip emails. But there's thousands of tactics, webinars, drip emails, you know, tons of stuff that you can do to help people onboard. But I would say spend more time trying to understand truly what it takes for somebody to be successful. And don't be that fast in thinking you know what it is. Because you have a bunch of assumptions that are probably wrong.
So it's more about making sure that you go through that learning process. Just because you think something, like say, for example, they need to sign up and set up their account and they need to do X in order to make the product work, for example. Don't just assume that, oh, throwing a video out there is going to do it. Like, you actually have to call them, talk to them, walk them through that and see what it is that kind of motivates them to actually do that.
That's one thing, but you might even be wrong about, you think, well, everybody that sets up their email account on our system will be, you know, more active and more successful. And that might be true, but it might not. Mm-hmm. Right? You really need to make sure that you're not jumping to conclusions too quickly. And also, even once you've figured out what makes somebody really successful in the onboarding process, your job is not done forever. Because people change, businesses change, your product changes, the market changes. So you want to make sure that with some level of frequency, you go and revisit and test your assumptions again and go, we always knew that this is making people successful. Is this still true today?
Right. And that goes kind of back to what I think Des said this morning about having people go through your sign-up process, for example. That's kind of what you're getting at.
I do want to mention one thing before the next question about this that sums up kind of some of it. Is the person that did the concierge onboarding course here somewhere? Because there was a concierge onboarding course. I think it was a Microsoft attendee. But basically, the tactic is called concierge onboarding. And there's a bunch of ebooks and stuff like that out there about it. I think what people jump to is the product sort of marketing and the drip emails. And instead, doing something where you're hand-holding a lot more so you can learn is much smarter. And there's a name for it, concierge onboarding. So look that up. And I think that'll give you an idea of how that sort of process would work.
Very cool. So the next question comes to us from Peter Shanley, and he says, have you seen patterns around third-party service integrations that are an important part of product strategy and when it would be most useful? For example, when are they the most strategic and helpful for acquisition, churn, revenue expansion, et cetera?
I like the last part of it better than the other parts of it because it starts with like what you're trying to improve. So any of those integrations, like usually you're trying to improve a metric. Just as a quick tip, unless it's like a Shopify app store type thing, a lot of the integrations won't help you with acquisition. So you might want to think about these integrations for retention or engagement. For example, if you integrate with Slack with your product, because I know that's becoming a really popular thing, you want to look at doing that if you think that getting that information, data, engagement in Slack would increase your retention or increase your engagement. So I would just say that like it really depends on what the problems are in your business and whether an integration is going to help solve them, and also whether you're trying to attract new customers from it that might not already might if your existing customers didn't need that integration. So again, just back to what's your business problem and how our integration is going to help solve it is the approach I would take.
Are there situations where you can see that those integrations are generally, I guess, predictable as being an ultra good thing for your business? Like, are there certain market verticals that those types of integrations work better for, or is it very, very largely dependent on like the audience that your product serves?
Every single thing I've seen is dependent on audience and also dependent on what's popular right now. Okay. So you're seeing so many Slack integrations. If you see other companies be successful with it or something, really try to figure out why they're being successful, because I actually think the opposite. I think it's risky to integrate without understanding how it's going to impact your user base and your own metrics.
Mm-hmm. And why is that?
I think it's one of the themes of the conference so far that I've seen, which is like, you could waste a lot of effort on it and it might not be the one most important thing or the thing you should focus on. So you could spend all this time doing a Slack integration for your finance app when they don't use Slack or they don't want the finance numbers pushed to Slack and stuff like that.
Okay. So our next question comes from Lester Buck. And he says, we can always practice selling by selling our own products and services, but that doubles the tension because it's our product. And we can't be sure whether it's the product or us having no sales skills when we're having troubles. What are some strategies for introverts, techies, and geeks to learn to sell by selling other people's products? One guru once suggested telemarketing for a weekend, but from Craigslist ads, they asked for a year's experience. And during the week, is something like Sandler sales training worth trying?
Hidden.
this is not for me.
This is clearly not directed to me. So there's so much in that question. So let's say you don't have a lot of sales experience. You would classify yourself as a more technical person. And you're like, you know, when we fail selling our product, we don't know, is it the product? Is it me or is it the product, right? And should we go and try doing, you know, telemarketing or taking courses? All that can be great, but the question is just, what is the optimal use of your time? If you had all the time in the world, I would tell you to take all classes, read all the books, do everything, right? But if you already have a product, might as well invest the effort in trying to sell that. If you're uncomfortable about it, what I would tell you to do is, like, sales is something that happens every day. You just have to think about it that way. So instead of selling the product to a customer, maybe what you need to do first is selling people on giving you feedback about their problem, right? How about you're setting the goal every day, I'm gonna have 10 conversations with people. If you don't know where to find people, just go into, you know, a Starbucks or something and buy people coffee and then say, I have 3 questions, and learn to ask good questions and dig really deep and try to understand their issues or their challenges around the problem that you're trying to solve with your product, mm-hmm. right? You can sell so many things. It's yourself asking people for time or feedback and improve and iterate on that without being, a lot of people think to be good at sales, you have to be incredibly charismatic, and you don't at all. Like, you just need to understand how to ask some really good questions to understand what the problem is from the other side, and then indicate it or come to a conclusion if your product solves that, and then tell me that in a succinct way with the next action item. Hey, now that I heard these 10 things about you, I really think the product that I've built can solve your issues. Here's how it's going to do it and why it's good. And here's what I want you to do. You know, put your hand in your pocket, bring out the one with the credit card, and let's get started with a trial. Or something. You have to face that moment of truth of asking for something and then having the rejection as a response where people go, well, I don't want to do that. And that's where most people go, oh, I failed. And if you just stop doing that and you go, oh, now we can learn something. Hey, do you want to sign up for my new free product? Or do you want to sign up for my product? No. Cool. Why? What is missing? Was it me? Like, did I do a bad job? Am I talking too much, too little? Did I ask the wrong questions? Can I buy you coffee and ask you for feedback? I'm trying to improve. I'm trying to do better. What is it? Is the product really not doing what you want it to do? Why? If you think about it more as a learning experience versus a failure or success, I'm good or bad at sales, you're going to improve and get better and better at it. And there's talks out there. And if anybody in the audience or this specific person want to know a lot more, you can just shoot me an email at stella@closeout.com. I'll send you some resources and talks on, like, how to systematically get better at sales if you're not a sales dude or gal. But it's just the way of the attitude and approach is much more important than learning how to do sales or selling for somebody else.
It seems to me like there's an underlying theme with this question about being comfortable doing sales and being comfortable facing that rejection time and time again. And I've heard different strategies to essentially overcome those fears, one of which is you're not trying to make 3 sales, for example, per day. You're trying to just make 10 calls or 15 or 20 or something like that. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because, I mean, it seems to me like it's more of a psychological fear than it is about, you know, actually meeting sales numbers or, you know, getting a certain number of meeting a specific metric that is actually outside of your control. Like, you can control whether you make 10 calls or not, but you can't control whether or not, you know, 3 people actually purchase or anything.
Yeah, I would even take that idea further and go, instead of focusing on, you don't want to focus on success in sales, which is like, let's get 3 closed deals today. You can focus on activity, which is I'm going to make 10 calls. But even a level higher than that is to focus on failure. So to say, you know what, if I make 10 calls on average, 3 are going to be good, which is not going to be the case, but just for easy math. So I'm going to have to be rejected 7 times to get to success. So my goal every day is to get rejected 7 times. So if you get lucky or unlucky and you made 10 calls and you didn't reach anybody, your job is not done, right? And also, if somebody rejects you, that is now something that you can check off a list that is actually a little bit of something that brings you closer to your ultimate goal. So it's a little bit of playing mind games with your own head. But at the end of the day, sales, just like entrepreneurship, is not about being comfortable. That is not the name of the game. Asking somebody, nobody likes rejection. Neither do I. So asking somebody for like, hey, do you want to do this? Do you want to sign up? Do you want to give me money? Is an uncomfortable moment. All you have to do is train that muscle, train to be more comfortable with doing uncomfortable things, because there's no way around it. I have no better way of doing it. So when people, I think that this is a good add-on question, because a lot of times people, because they feel so uncomfortable, they try to avoid that. And then they go, can I read a book that's going to make this easier? Or like, can I watch a talk? Or can I do something else? And you can do all these things, but it's not going to make it more comfortable. You have to get comfortable with the idea that you're going to have to feel a certain level of discomfort consistently if you want to accomplish the dreams and goals you have for your business. So the sooner you get, you know, the sooner you accept that reality, the easier your life's going to be.
Excellent. Great. Our next question comes from Jack Jones, and he says, what are some strategies you've seen work for repairing burnout?
Yeah, I'm assuming this is more like I started the business and I'm